From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk stress and how much the meanings of sentences can change depending on which words we emphasize. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do every week, Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Ross Petrus from your home in Toronto. Ross, should I even ask how you're doing?
Well, I'm doing a lot better, Fletcher, and thanks for asking. Last week, I slipped and fell backwards during a freak snowstorm and landed on my back on the stairs. And boy, did I pull a muscle. But it got me to thinking. I have a question for both you and Kathy. Do you know the origin of the word muscle?
Muscle?
We're not talking about the thing that we eat, right? We're talking about the
we're talking about the Ross's pulled muscle.
The origin of the word, like what language did it come from originally?
Yeah, it's really sort of fun.
In Spanish, they say pretty much the same thing, so I was assuming Latin.
It is Latin, Kathy, you're right, and it's a really fun word because the origin is musculus in Latin, which is little mouse.
Ooh.
And apparently, this may be a folk etymology, but when you do your bicep, it kind of like does like a little jump and it looks like a little something in there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Ross. Remember when we were kids, Theo Potti would do his
muscles? Oh, I do remember Theo Potti with his
muscles.
And muscle.
It did look like that.
It bounced
cool.
up and down.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought a lot about that lying on my back in pain.
I guess at least you had something to keep you distracted. I don't know what to say.
Exactly.
About that.
I don't think it distracted him that much, Fletcher. There's a limit to how much etymology can make your back feel better.
Well, Kathy, you are at your home in Armilla in Spain. No injuries to speak of with you, as far as I know?
No, I'm fine. I'm healthy. I can walk around without wincing.
Well, today we're talking about something that I find very interesting being in radio. When I have to write a script, I am very conscious of where to put the stress in a sentence, what words I Ooh. Need to really punch in order to get a specific idea across. And so I'm excited to find out what you guys have in mind, because that is sort of what we're talking about today, right? Stress in sentences.
Well, first, Fletcher, I'm going to quash
backs.
I'm going to quash Fletcher's statement.
Oh,
we're starting with a couple of just minor things we got emails for, if it's all right. And we're quashing this because that is exactly the question we got from a listener. Kathy, do you want to read the email?
This one intrigued us. We got an email from Denny in New York who wrote, "I keep seeing squash when I'd have used quash, as in this headline from a business newsletter I get, The Hustle. It says, workplace etiquette. Companies move to squash bad habits." So they end up saying, does anyone use quash anymore? And Ross and I both, when we saw this, got interested because I've noticed that myself. That
so have I.
You rarely see quash, or at least I rarely see quash. I almost always see squash now.
And it's interesting because Kathy and I, when we discussed it, we both really don't like it. I mean, it doesn't really make much of a difference, but we both say quash. And when we see squash the problem, we both kind of wince. And what about you, Fletcher?
Well, I never use squash in this sense. I rarely use quash, so I guess I must just be choosing other words.
Well, we just did a Google search out of curiosity, and we did two different phrases. We did quash the problem and squash the problem. Quash the problem was 332,000 results. I mean, this was so unscientific. And squash the problem was 533,000.
Yeah.
Then we went to the gossip, quash the gossip and squash the gossip, because that's the one I had seen. And quash the gossip was only 60,000, whereas squash the gossip was 271,000. So clearly, quash is losing. It's quashing itself. It is being squashed.
The interesting thing, though, is, and this sort of interested both of us, it doesn't really matter. They both give you the same basic idea of what you're doing to a problem. But it is interesting that it bothered both of us to switch to squash from quash. But like, why? It just, I think it's a habit and we both prefer quash. Although I think quash is going to be long, long gone pretty soon.
It's
going to
be a fossil word.
Yeah.
Did you happen to look and see how long squash has been used in this sense?
I actually found that it's quite old.
Yeah, that's what I would have expected.
Here, in the 1700s, the OED has as a definition for squash, to quash. So there you have it. Uh-huh.
Although I do think in the early 1900s, I think quash was used. I tried to do a little bit of research to see, but I mean, it's hard to do, but it does seem that quash was used more frequently than squash. In the sense of quashing the problem or quashing dissent or whatever. So I do think that it has changed in more recent times, even though they were both used interchangeably a long time ago. And I mean, you know, we had squash last night for dinner, and I didn't say we had quash for dinner.
Oh, Ross.
I think this doesn't really bother me all that much. I like quash as a word. That's nice. But squash works there just fine. It's a word that we use a whole lot more in other ways. And so it makes a lot of sense that it would just sort of replace quash. Because quash, when else are we ever using that word?
Never.
Never.
I don't think I've ever used quash that way. I just like the specificity of quash. I mean, because squash, I do picture someone sitting on someone or something,
right.
You know?
Right. I don't disagree with that. I think maybe it doesn't bother me all that much, even though, you know, quash is a nice word.
It's a gone word, though. I don't think we're going to see it.
Yeah.
Speaking of other things, we got another email, and someone said to, it's from Minneapolis. Someone said to me when I was in the UK, I said, I've gotten that. And they told me that was wrong. It should be, I've got that.
Uh-huh.
Which is it, Fletcher?
I think, I'm guessing that depends on where you are. I have some vague recollection of being told that gotten was incorrect when I was in elementary school or something, but that sort of seems like somebody trying to hang on to a convention that maybe just has passed them by. I think a lot of people say gotten here in the US, and probably not so much in the UK. Yeah.
Yep, it is.
What about in Canada?
Canada's gotten as well. In England, it's got. I mean, the key thing is it's really in British English, it's get, got, and then the participle is got.
Okay.
So it's I get, I got, I have got. In American English, it tends to be gotten. Get, I got, I have gotten. So, I mean, you're completely correct. It depends on which side of the Atlantic you're on. And in Canada, it's very much gotten as well.
On the flip side, in America, we say, like I say, you don't say, I have to go. You go, I've got to go. I've got to go. I've got to,
right.
Actually, is how I say it. I've got to go. But in Britain, it's just, I have to go more often, which is much more proper.
I looked at that. I was actually curious when you said that. And apparently, though, a lot of Brits do also say, I have got to go as well. And they say have is more common in British English, but they both do say have got as well.
See, but I wouldn't even say I have got to go. I would say I've got to. It's got to be the contraction. It's I've got. Do you ever say I have got to go? I don't think so.
Catherine, of course. I have got to go.
Fletcher, that's cut off his mic immediately.
I was always really bad at accents.
I refuse to talk to him anymore. I've got to cut it off.
Just blame your back injury, Ross. Just blame that for,
yeah, no, exactly.
For anything this episode. It's all because of the back end.
I know. I know. Actually, guys, I have a question for you. We have the English, the American English, have gotten. Can you give me the three different meanings of have gotten?
Whoa.
Three different meanings of I have gotten?
Yes.
Okay, let's think about this for a moment. Let's think of one, first of all. I have gotten a cold.
Okay, that's good. I've obtained something.
Right.
One, you got it
right.
Down, Fletcher.
Okay.
One, done.
One, good.
Beep.
All right.
Okay.
Speaking of have gotten, I want to just pull back the curtain just a little bit for people who can't actually see what's going on. One of my favorite things about recording with Kathy is that it's evening time usually where she is, and every now and then her husband will very quietly sneak into the room and bring her a new glass of wine, and it delights me every time. And I know people obviously can't see it and can't hear it either, because he's quite silent when he moves in there. He's very good at
it. It's like a silent butler.
Anyway, so you have gotten some wine now, Kathy, and
yes, I have.
Right,
this will lubricate my brain.
And now has Kathy gotten inebriated?
Uh-huh. Oh, so you've become something. You've
right. Yeah. That's number two. Good.
Okay, so we have obtained, become.
Okay, we have a third one now.
Is the third one more obscure? Do we use it less?
I mean, not really, no.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I've gotten tired.
That's okay. Become something.
No, that's like I've obtained exhaustion or something.
I have gotten really bad at that. No, that's become something again.
Right.
This is
become.
This is hard.
Okay, we got becoming and getting.
Obtaining.
Well, yes. God, he's like, yeah. You know.
Third, let's just, we have to move on here rather than just. Kathy, did you get into medical school?
Oh,
Kathy,
I've gotten into medical school. Yeah.
But you don't say gotten, really. I've gotten into medical school
many times.
No.
Many times.
Well, not you. I don't think you did that well in your MCATs. I don't know. So.
I've gotten into Harvard. I've gotten into the community college, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like you've been entered into. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's fun. I had no idea.
Okay, now let's move on to stress. We're talking about sentence stress. There are two different kinds of stress. This is, in a sentence, which word do you emphasize? And that's called sentence stress, not word stress, just to make sure about this.
Right, so would word stress be sort of like which syllable you stress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, we're doing which word or words in the sentence are you stressing to create meaning.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're going to play a little game with this very, I'm going to say this with no stress whatsoever, hopefully. I never said she stole my money. That's pretty unstressed, I think.
That was pretty good.
I'll say it again.
It was slightly
stressed. I never
stressed.
Said she stole my money.
You're right.
And now we're going to play a linguistic game. How many different meanings can you derive from this very sentence with emphases or stresses on different words?
How many words are there? I never said she stole my money. I can do at least 7 different meanings.
Very good. Let's go through them, Fletcher. Let's see you do it.
Okay, sure. Let's just go word by word. I never said she stole my money.
Right.
So somebody else might have said that, but hey, I never accused her of that.
Perfect.
I never said she stole my money. That's something, I mean, I guess that's sort of like that's not something I ever accused her of, and maybe nobody did, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I never said she stole my money.
Right.
Maybe I intimated that, right? But I never actually said
excellent.
It.
This is interesting, yeah.
I never said she stole my money.
Right.
I said somebody did, but I don't know that it was her. I never said she stole my money. Somehow she got it, but I never said she stole it. And let's see. I never said she stole. I never said she stole my money. She stole money, but I never accused her of my own. And I never said she stole my money. She stole something, right? But I never said it was my money.
Exactly. You aced that. We never said you wouldn't be able to answer this.
I love it. I love those things. That's so much fun.
It was really interesting. We did a little bit of research on this, and Kat, we can go on what kind of stress it is, but apparently there were a large number of articles by TEFL, Teaching English as a Foreign Language, professors and teachers, all of whom said that students of English have real problems getting it when English isn't their native language, which really fascinated us, because apparently other languages, depending on what language, have different kinds of stress, and most do have a similar type of stress, but it's difficult if it's a foreign tongue, which really, and they were saying we instinctively, like Fletcher, you just did it, and when you were saying it, I instantly knew each time,
right,
as I'm sure Kathy did, what exactly was meant. No problems, you know, none. But apparently it's tough if you're learning English as a foreign language.
Well, you've got a lot to pay attention to, right, when you're learning a foreign language. And so that's sort of a subtle thing. I mean, even though you can clearly hear it, as you did just now when I said all of those sentences, you're paying attention to a lot of different things when you're learning a language, too.
Yeah, well, I think the thing with the stresses is it ends up being more nuanced than anything else. Because why is I never said she stole my money? I mean, okay, we immediately go, okay, someone else did. But if you're, yeah, if it's not your language, you don't necessarily know the importance of that I.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
How much do you guys think about this when, I don't know how often either of you read things out loud, but I'm wondering how often people think about this when they are writing. Because, you know, I work in radio and I edit a lot of other people's work, and sometimes I will hear someone read a script a certain way that that they've recorded, mm-hmm. and I'll go back to them and I'll say, why did you say it that way? Because what you really mean is this, and you know, I'll just stress a different word, and they'll say, oh yeah, that is what I meant.
It's funny you say that, because it's exactly what I do, and Kath always yells at me. I'll ital words, and Kath goes, why do you ital it? But I hear the stress on that word, so I ital it. And then Kath goes, that's not the way you write. And she's correct. I take it out then.
What I was going to say was, Ross, you remember when we did the audio versions of you're saying it wrong. That doesn't mean what you think it means, mm-hmm. in awkward moments. We had to read the book. And when I was reading it, I found a lot of times I wasn't reading it. So I would stress something incorrectly and I would have to go back and redo it, because you're looking at the sentence and in your head. For me at least, I was so busy. Well, my eye was crossing the entire time. Yeah. So it didn't make life simple anyway. But I found a bunch of times, like, because the stress made a difference, sometimes when I was reading it, like, just straight, I would assume something, and then I'd get to the next sentence, and I'd be like, well, crap, I shouldn't have said it that way, you know?
That's interesting.
I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah. That's interesting. We both have different ideas on stress when we're writing and reading. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is called contrastive stress, incidentally. And obviously you're stressing a certain word to draw attention to it. And usually, though, in English, they're basically... Kathy, why don't you go into this? This was always with the nucleus stress, which I thought was really interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's like usually with sentence stress in English, the stress falls on the last word, or more like the last important word.
A content word, yeah.
It was called the nuclear stress rule. It was termed that in 1956 by Noam Chomsky and two others. And they were saying it's sometimes called the tonic. The nucleus is the special content word. And it's usually nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs, and like the who, what, where, why, when question words. And then they also said negative words like not and so forth are usually stressed. But like the things like pronouns, prepositions, auxiliary verbs, they're usually unstressed, usually. So it's like, as always in English, it's all rather vague.
Yeah. And the other point was the nucleus is sometimes it's the loudest syllable, but not always. And they were talking about like a musical prominence in the pitch, which is, in other words, the pitch is different in terms of stress. And nucleus is English have their own special musical tone, which starts on the nucleus and continues to the end of that phrase. And this whole thing really got me, because when I read it, it reiterated something that I usually forget. Like, I always think of, I have a number of friends who are Chinese, either Cantonese or Mandarin speakers. And their language has a lot of different pitches and all that. And I always think of English as being, I know it's not, but I think of it as being sort of monotonal, and it's not at all. Mm-hmm. We have our own music to our speech as well.
It's so weird, because I'm just looking at the example that they had in the article about nucleus thing, is the phrase, sorry, I'm late. Mm-hmm. Okay, so late is the last content word in the sentence, but whether it'll be the nucleus or not depends on whether you already knew you were late, the person you're speaking with. So late could just be old information. So you don't go, sorry, I'm late, but you'd be, sorry, I'm late.
Right, right. Everybody knows you're late already.
Isn't that weird? So, yeah.
We're going to do other examples now of stress. This is where they're like, if it's like a contrastive stress with amongst two different speakers, we're going to ask you where the stress would go in the answer here, okay?
Okay.
Do you want coffee or tea? And you decide that you want tea and you say, tea, please. Are you going to stress something here or not?
It's probably tea a little bit. Tea, please.
Right. Exactly.
And that was very musical. It was a nucleus.
Right?
It was
yeah,
a musical tea.
No, I mean, and that's, that, I think that's important to recognize, again, how musical, you know, speaking can be. I remember one time early on when I was starting in public radio, I did a workshop with a public radio editor, and I was trying to learn how to voice things, and I was not doing a great job. I was pretty flat in my voicing, and she would say, "Why do you read like that?" And I'd say, "Well, I just, you know, I mean, I'm trying to read like I speak, and I don't speak particularly expressively." And she says, "What are you talking about? You know, everything you say is really musical, and it's not specifically me. It's people."
Mm-hmm. Things go up, and you said, "What are you talking about?"
Right, exactly.
Everything you say, you did.
Yeah. Things go up and down, and you know, there's certain emphases here and there, and it's true of, I mean, most people, not everybody. Some people are pretty flat in the way they speak, but everything is just so much more musical, I think, than people realize with our language.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really interesting with that. So let's go to the next one then.
Okay, here's round two. Where do you stress in each case?
Okay, the question is, did you go to the store yesterday or not? And the answer is, yes, I went to the store yesterday. So it sort of depends, I think, probably on how the question is said, right? Did you go to the store yesterday? Well, yeah, that's weird. Mostly people would be asking, did you go to the store yesterday or not? Yes, I went to the store yesterday.
I heard two stresses.
You did it like me.
No, he didn't. He did it with not. There was a slight stress on not, and there was a slight stress on went, is what I heard.
No, he said, I went to the store yesterday, like I said it should be.
Okay, Kathy and I had a big fight on this one. This is from a linguistics textbook. The linguistics textbook said went would be the stress on this one. I mean, it depends, of course. We went through a whole litany of different meanings earlier, so it does depend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ross, you do it. Did you go to the store yesterday or not?
Yeah, I went to the store yesterday.
Yeah, I went to the store yesterday.
Okay, you did it that way.
Yeah, I went.
Thank you.
Yeah.
See, I would say, yeah, I went to the store yesterday.
Would you? I mean, it's sort of... So here's an example of when I think we need more context, because we don't really know what the rest of the conversation is. Is somebody, you know, annoyed that maybe you didn't go to the store? Is it just a casual question?
Right.
Are they really wanting to know if yesterday is when you went to the store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw it more as grilling. Yes, I went to the store yesterday. I don't know why they're attacking me in such a way. It's like there's a light shining in my face and there's a copper. Sorry.
But that's the whole interesting thing, though. It does really, you know, it does depend on, meaning can vary. The normal meaning we had was normally, probably, it would be this sort of meaning, but it could be differently as well. This one, I think, though, is different. The next example. This one seems to pretty much have two stresses that are pretty much...
Yeah,
there.
Did you park? Okay, here's the question. Did you park your car inside the garage? The answer is no, I parked my car outside. So I guess the no and the outside are the stresses in the answer, right? I mean, that's what it seems to me. This one seems pretty straightforward. I don't know.
And then inside to me seems to be the stress.
Did you park your car inside the garage?
Yeah, because you're basically contrasting. I mean, we said it's contrastive stress, and you're contrasting inside and outside. But again, we've said this before. I mean, we can have entirely different meanings too, as we...
Or in this one, you could also do the stress and it wouldn't change the meaning. Did you park your car inside the garage? No,
yeah.
I parked my car outside.
Earlier, Ross was talking about sort of how the stress kind of continues on through the end sometimes of a phrase. And I think inside the garage is that sort of
I think you're correct
phrase, because it does sound like you're stressing garage. Mm-hmm. But I think what you're really doing is building the stress through the entire phrase inside the garage.
I think
garage.
You're completely correct.
Yeah, inside the garage is kind of the entire stress.
Okay, let's look at one more example here. Could you just read this, Fletcher, like you would normally say it? I'm curious if we can hear the stress.
Let me just take a look at this. I will read it just as I would read it without really thinking too much. Tom's very good at football, whereas he is really bad at doing other sports.
Okay, that's interesting. I heard stress at good, and then I heard it as really bad. What about you, Kathy?
No, I heard it as very good and other sports.
Okay, yeah.
Tom is very good. Very good. Yeah, Tom is very good at football, whereas he is really bad at doing other stuff.
I heard
okay,
really
now
bad.
The really bad. I heard the very...
Yeah.
Okay, so it is very good and really bad.
Yes. Okay, here's another really fun one, Fletcher. This is really fun.
How about this? Wait, stop. Let's replace really with a very. Let's use very twice
okay.
in that sentence.
Do it again.
Okay.
Tom is very good at football, whereas he is very bad at doing other sports.
Yeah, that is like the good and the bad. Right? That's really contrastive.
Yeah.
So when it's the same word, but when you put really there, when it was very good and really bad, then it sort of becomes the two different phrases rather than just the two words.
This is really interesting.
This is one of those ones where you say stuff that you don't think about when you're talking or writing. Well, this is a talking one, obviously. And it always gets me.
I know, it does get me too. This one I love, though. We both love this one.
Mm-hmm.
Using the stress in this sentence, you can completely change the meaning of the sentence.
Mm.
This isn't just a stress, like this is definitely a different, we're changing the verb here.
Okay.
Just with stress.
So it says, she washed and brushed her hair. I'm trying to be as neutral there as I can.
Okay. Right.
Okay, so probably I would just look at that and say, she washed and brushed her hair.
Okay, what did she do then?
To me, that sounds like she both washed and brushed her hair. Like she did both things to her hair.
Mm-hmm.
But you could say she washed and brushed her hair.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Meaning she bathed and also brushed her hair.
Exactly.
Yeah. That one I really like because you don't really realize it. I mean, in this case.
It's something that I think, you know, a lot of times we have miscommunications in emails. And I think it's because when we're writing things, we are often putting stresses on words in our heads, but we can't communicate them on the page. And so something could be ambiguous without us even realizing it, and someone else could understand it in a different way. This is an example, of course. You know, I could mean that she bathed and she brushed her hair, but you could read that and think that I'm just talking about her hair exclusively.
We're making one thing transitive and one intransitive. Intransitive means that you do it to yourself.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, you do it to yourself, so you're dressing yourself in this case. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have one last one we can do. Fletcher has a nice new young baby. So we have this sentence right here.
Oh, Fletcher dressed and fed the baby. Well, one thing I know about me right now is that I have very little time for dressing myself.
This, everybody who's listening, is why he's doing this in the nude right now.
Yeah. Thank goodness this is audio. Fletcher dressed and fed the baby. You know, if I just read that, I would think it was all being done to the baby, but it could be that Fletcher dressed and fed the baby.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And this final one is really fun. Okay. Now, we say your partner complains to you, we never watch a comedy film. Now, you can reply in two different ways.
Oh, okay. All right. So the question was, or the statement was, we never watch a comedy film.
And Fletcher replies.
I could say, I'll try to read it flatly. Yeah, why don't we watch a comedy film? Okay. I could say, yeah, why don't we watch a comedy film? Like, hey, you're right. Why don't we do that? Or I could say, yeah, why don't we watch a comedy film? As in I'm suggesting, okay, yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
You have become a stress master.
Exactly.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.